History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 409, 90 degrees on the board here in Pittston on this Wednesday, June 4th, 2025. I don't want to hear a single one of you say it's too hot outside. It was great outside. Beautiful, get some things done. Some weather's moving in, but we'll deal with it. You know, that's what the early summer, late spring is supposed to be about. So Zelensky bombed Russian airfields. Putin told Trump during a telephone conversation today that he will respond. And Zelensky is now proposing a ceasefire. It's going to be interesting times out there. And listen, to hear about what took place with the Russian strategic bombers is just incredible. But what's being left out of the whole, you know, how good this attack was and how devastating it was to Russia was at the very same time, Russia was really pounding Ukraine as well and gaining hundreds of miles of ground. So in the big picture of things, as for, you know, a daily who won, who lost, it's very close to a draw. But the strategic bombers are a hit for Russia because it's not something they can replace anytime soon, if at all. Now, here's some problems that need to be discussed with this. The reason why those bombers were out in the open is because of a nuclear agreement with the U.S., where Russian bombers need to be out in the open so our satellites can see them, just like our bombers need to be out in the open so Russian satellites can see them. It's to prove that, you know, we're not arming everything up. We're not preparing for anything. They're not missing in somewhere in flight somewhere. So will this be used by the Russians, President Putin, to turn around and say, we're no longer going to abide by this treaty because it's leaving our infrastructure vulnerable? It very well could. And you also have a phone call that lasted an hour and 15 minutes per reports from the White House, where President Trump spoke to Vladimir Putin. And Putin did, in fact, say that he would respond to these attacks on the Russian bomber infrastructure and what that means, what it entails. I know there's been a lot of fear as far as stepping this up to a nuclear response. Does Russia respond with a tactical nuke somewhere in Ukraine to let them know that there's a red line that they will not pass? They're getting desperate. So I know military analysts in the U.S. are concerned that that could be an option. Hopefully that option was discussed and taken off the table during the conversation today between the two presidents, but we will see. It's interesting because they were also meeting that day for peace talks, Ukraine and Russia. And those peace talks fell apart and lasted less than an hour because of the ongoing back and forth and the striking of these bombers. But the mission itself is something out of James Bond, you know, akin to the beeper and cell phone and radios that Israel did with Hezbollah, where they smuggled in these fabricated houses with remote-controlled roofs and these drones, and they placed them strategically around the area of these airfields. And on by remote control, they were able to remotely open the roofs of these structures, and the drones took off closer to the target and were able to strike their target. So this is something that was, they say, was planned for over a year and just came to fruition. But it's interesting that it was on the same day that peace talks were taking place. So do both sides, do either side truly want peace? At this point, it doesn't appear so. But we'll see where it moves from here. So that's a little update on what's going on there, because it was quite the operation, but literally our media is really only talking about one side of it. Because there were massive strikes from Russia in Ukraine and a lot of ground gained by Russia that was previously lost. The other thing that we touched on yesterday as it was breaking were these Chinese national couple charged with smuggling crop-killing funguses into the U.S., potential agroterrorism weapon. Now, you know, yesterday I kind of started rambling off the economic impact that this would have. And basically, it affects our cereal crops, our wheat, our barley, our corn. this would be devastating. If there was a widespread blight of our cereal crops, we would no doubt be thrust into a depression. You're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. You're talking increased costs, inflation, our food chain, the poisoning of both us and livestock. The mere fact that these two individuals were caught by U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers attempting to smuggle in this fungus, a biological pathogen considered a potential agroterrorism weapon, into the U.S. via the Detroit Metropolitan Airport, according to a criminal complaint. At this point in time, I don't see why there hasn't been already, and there may be, and we just don't know about it. There needs to be extreme vetting of anyone coming from China or any Chinese national. And that's through intermediary countries as well. So if you travel from China to Europe to America, this extra vetting needs to be done. And by extra vetting, I just don't mean who you are and why you're here and is all your paperwork in line. I mean physical searches. I mean scans. I mean anything. I mean, this agroterrorism, this is a biological weapon. This is a biological pathogen that is considered an agroterrorism weapon. This is not to be taken lightly. And I understand it seems to be being downplayed as far as...
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What actually happened, but there were people on being interviewed today saying, you know, at any other given time, this would be an act of war. If you are trying to sabotage our agricultural infrastructure, that is an act of war. If you are trying to sabotage our industrial infrastructure, it's an act of war. Our financial infrastructure, it's an act of war. There is no hiding that China has been preparing for well over a decade for a conflict with the U.S. It's open. Our military on a daily basis trains for a potential conflict with China. We are flooding assets to the South China Sea and the Pacific for a conflict with China. Now, it may not be a direct conflict between us and China. It could be Taiwan. It could be Japan. It could be the Philippines. Just like there was daily combat in the Red Sea, in the Middle East, that we didn't see day in and day out. Missiles were targeting thousands of Americans to kill them multiple times a day on a daily basis. American servicemen really didn't hear much. Matter of fact, the last administration weren't even responding to it. Well, they didn't hit anything, so, you know, there's no sense in trying to escalate. Listen, there is no, you know, we're not going to escalate the situation. Until they're all dead, it will continue. I think we've learned that in a couple places. You finally start having the ruling families in Palestine writing letters now saying that they will no longer recognize Hamas because they've brought nothing but pain to our area and us and our people. So you're starting to see a change there. China's no different. China is literally crashing ships into, and they're not using Chinese military ships. They're using their maritime ships, their fishing, so-called fishing vessels, and I use that with air quotes, that are militarized fishing vessels. They're their commercial fleets that are part of the government. They listen, there is no private companies in China. Everything is owned by the Chinese government. Everything is overseen by the Chinese government. So if you have a fleet of fishing vessels, they are government military vessels. But they can say, well, you know, it's fishing vessels, and they're just challenging the fishing territories. But they're crashing their ships into Taiwanese ships, Japan ships, Philippine ships, the coast guards of those countries. The Chinese coast guards are shooting water cannons on a daily basis and crashing into and pushing around those countries' actual commercial ships, bullying them, saying you're in Chinese territorial waters when they're obviously in international waters or their own waters. So the mere fact that these people tried to get in and they have an educational background in being able to sustain and spread this. They also lied about it. They made false statements about the visit to the U.S. and his knowledge of the pathogen before admitting to law enforcement that he was bringing the noxious fungus to his girlfriend, 33-year-old University of Michigan lab researcher, according to authorities. Why is a Chinese national with connections to the Chinese Communist Party a researcher in the University of Michigan? Again, things that need to change, things that need to stop. And then you add in the tens of thousands of Chinese nationals who made it into this country after the last administration that we have no idea where or who they are. They're gotaways. Some of them were stopped and we have an idea who they are, but we don't know where they are. What are they here for? What did they bring in? What are we seeing now that's just starting and kind of under the radar as far as a pathogen, as far as a disease, as far as anything else? The downplaying of what this could have potentially done. Listen, this fungus and a blight of our cereal crops would have sent this nation into a depression. I saw two economists and one agricultural specialist that said it would have made COVID look like a birthday party as far as shutting down everything. Supply chains, governments, everything. It is our number one agricultural crop, our cereal crops. It affects our ethanol, 40% of our ethanol production. This would have hit us, you and I, on every spectrum. But yet, you know, they just caught the two Chinese nationals coming in. No big deal. Every red flag there possibly is should be waving right now when it comes to Chinese nationals, when it comes to anyone who has anything to do or even originating in China. They need to go through extreme vetting. They need to have extreme searches, scans. Whatever we need to do needs to start happening because it's a free-for-all. The mere fact the first time these two were stopped was at Detroit airport should scare the hell out of all of us, because it no doubt scares the hell out of me. And I used to do this for a living.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.